This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to the Scotland Outdoors podcast. Thank you very much for downloading us. This week is Dementia Awareness Week. Now, I don't know why it is the case, but more and more people seem to be living with dementia. It's not an easy condition for them. It's very often not an easy condition for their families either. We thought we would look in this programme at how being outdoors, how the experience of being in nature can actually help people living with the condition in whatever context. This is what we came up with. If I were to say the word dementia to you, what springs to mind? Most people, if they were being honest, said, well, it's to do with memory loss, isn't it? Getting confused, a sort of shrinking of the self. In actual fact, dementia is an umbrella term. It covers a whole variety of symptoms caused by various diseases, the most common being Alzheimer's. But there can be many other reasons behind dementia too. We're going to look at the positive effect being in the outdoors can have on people living with dementia, and very importantly, for those caring for them too. We've spoken to folk who are in that situation. They often forget what they're talking about, what they're doing, what they've done, and they repeat themselves. We thought it was important to be honest, so we've tried to represent these conversations as literally as we can, but we wanted to flag up the fact that you might find it just a wee bit unsettling. Let's begin with Alistair, who's in the early stages of dementia. Helen Needham met him at a Stride for Life group walk in Perthshire, where they took a wee stroll around Bankfoot.
Well, because I'm gone past the point of driving now.
Mm.
I'm so old that I'm not allowed to drive a car.
Is that frustrating?
It is, but I just do it. My wife does the driving now. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose I'm lucky. I'm up to, 82? Yeah.
You're looking in pretty fine fettle for 82.
Well, that's where it is. Well, I was overseas for most of my life. The Arabian Gulf, principally.
Right, okay.
Land. I was going to go to India, and I had an uncle who'd been there, and he said, no, not there. Go up to Bahrain and that sort of thing. And that's what I did. Worked all the way around the Gulf. We had to do a 3-year stint each time. But I enjoy it because I had to go and learn Arabic and all the rest of it. But it couldn't be better. You know, you meet an awful lot of different people, different languages and so on. So watch your feet. I couldn't say that I'd anything better to go to.
But not the same green as here?
Oh, no. Nice
sand.
Sand. Nice people, too. Need to learn the Arabic, too, as well.
So you know how to speak Arabic?
I used to.
Yeah.
you lose it, you know.
Yeah, if you're not speaking it regularly. Mm.
But it couldn't be better, I think. We meet a lot of different people and don't know how they live and what have you. And even in the different people in the Gulf, once you get up to Basra, you know, they just had different attitudes and operations.
And you found that interesting?
Yeah. And they were very good, and I had to learn Arabic too. I had to go to the school and... what's it name? Honestly, my memory goes walkabout now. You don't have any pills to put in.
I'm afraid I don't.
It turns out that Alistair's daily ritual of a walk might be doing him more good than he thinks. June Andrews is Professor Emeritus of the Public Understanding of Dementia at Stirling University. She explained to me some of the main symptoms of dementia and how exercise in the outdoors can help.
One of the things that people with dementia will tell you is that sleep becomes a problem. And there's nothing worse than lying awake at night worrying about things. And also, families will say that the person with dementia sometimes turns night into day. And we know that exercise is a really good way of promoting sleep. But exercise in the outdoors, exercise in daylight, seems to have a particular value. Now, there's a big biochemical reason for that involving hormones and diurnal rhythms. But just to summarise it, basically, if you can get out and about, particularly in the morning, in the fresh air, then that terrible problem of sleeplessness may be alleviated. Stress is really awful for people with dementia. And you know yourself that getting outside, getting the fresh air, particularly if you're marching about and taking exercise, that's great for alleviating stress. So even though it doesn't specifically do anything usually for the underlying condition that's causing the dementia, it takes away some of the pain and difficulty that a person has. And, you know, being outside, depending on where you are, but being outside can absolutely lift your soul. It can have a great spiritual benefit for you. And you need all of that you can get at that stage. And a third thing is there's more than one cause of dementia. And one of the major causes of dementia is vascular disease. And fundamentally, the problem there is you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain. And the thing that will improve the perfusion of your brain and the amount of oxygen is exercise, particularly exercise in the fresh air. And so there's just so many wonderful things about being outside, spiritual, physical, stress busting. I think for people with dementia, being out and about, I think, should be on prescription because, you know, for many people, it will make more difference than the medication does.
Going back to the idea of using aerobic exercise to combat vascular dementia, you can take somebody for a walk in a wood, and as you say, they'll get the full benefits, spiritual benefits, nature, etc. Or you could take them for a walk in a shopping mall. If this isn't a daft question, has MD actually done a comparative analysis of which is the greater benefit?
Well, as far as I know, there's been no scientific experiment about whether a day shopping is better than a day in the woods. But having said that, there are some people who are never going to go to the woods, and any exercise is better than no exercise. The great thing about a mall is there's no excuse that we can't go out and about because the weather's bad. So I think working on the assumption that any exercise is better than none, just keeping moving, is a good idea. But when you think about what happens when you go outside, the height of the sky above you and the feel of the wind on your face, fresh air, the nature that you're able to see, the sounds that you can hear, and the good companionship of the people that are with you, the things that you end up talking about that you never planned to talk about, I think the whole experience of being outside is just so wonderful that it's got to be the best.
Lovely time of year, this,
isn't it? It's nice. You get a lot of coolness, etc., when you're walking around.
Yes, you can feel the wind in your face.
Mm. As I said, I did this about, well, it must be 3 years or something more, something like that. But
did you grow up in Perthshire?
No. It was in Bahrain and the Gulf.
As a child?
Oh, no. That was all in the UK and educated in UK. But then when I went to, for 20, I think, I was sent to Arabic school and all that sort of stuff.
Which, right.
But the language gets lost eventually.
Yeah, it'll
if
be
you don't use it, you
it'll
lose
be
it.
Somewhere in there.
Oh, yes. You'd have to go back and get the book out. And I mean, I could say, how do you do, and how are you, and all that sort of
Can
stuff.
Can you do that for me now? I don't know any.
Shunuk. Kef Saktuk. But you know, I couldn't speak for any length of time with anybody. I just say, look, I'm sorry, I've been away from it for too long. It's like any language. If you don't use it, you lose it.
You spoke fluently at one point then?
What did I say? Gefali?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tripped off the tongue.
Yeah. How's your health, Gefali? So it was quite good. I mean, I was sent to the Arabic school in the Lebanon, and that was quite useful as well.
So you became fully immersed in it?
Mm-hmm.
Watch these stones here.
Yes.
And we'll hear more from Alistair later. Now, the Simeon Care for the Elderly home near Aberdeen has recently had an upgrade. A major part of that upgrade has been developing a garden where residents can safely enjoy being outdoors whenever they want. I went along to talk to some of the people who live there. Rob is one of them, and he was joined by his friend, Patricia. What is it about getting outside, Rob, that you actually like?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. So I don't know.
What do you do when you're outside?
That's a difficult one. What should I do? I can't think. I don't think I've got anything at all. All this. Is there anything else that? No. That is.
Well, it varies. Sometimes he goes for walks. Obviously, here you can walk around the enclosed garden. But he also helps with working in the garden. We were sweeping paths before the coffee break. But also weeding you've done, I think. Possibly planting too. But I can take him for walks, and the staff can take him for walks much further afield than the garden here, the enclosed garden. And I think the air and exercise do him good, and he's used to going for walks, as Isabel reminds him, they used to do some serious walking.
Isabel, where did you actually used to go walking?
Pardon?
Where did you used to go walking? What kind of walks did you do?
Oh, up in the hills and the mountains, Munro's. It was lovely. I miss it very much.
Well, the bird seed is over here, so we need to collect some.
All right. What bird?
My name's Michelle, and I'm the gardener and garden activity lady.
I don't want to be late.
I won't let you be late. I'll get you back in time.
Right.
All right.
It's grass cuttings all over the path.
Yes. It's a weekly task, but it's good for them.
Yeah.
Right. We'll turn round because the bird feeders are behind us.
Okay.
The ones we haven't done yet.
All right. Are you all right, Dad?
My name is Jeannie Carlson, and I'm the manager here at Simeon Care for the Elderly. The idea behind the garden is really to promote well-being through physical activity. Everybody, I guess you'd have to say, benefits from being outside. But when you start having a condition, an advanced condition like dementia, where going outside poses various risks, getting lost, also mobility is compromised, then you've got to think, how do you make that outdoor space readily available? So that's what the garden is designed to do. It's designed to be really an extension of the home. So you can go straight out of the home without any impediments. You just can walk out, you're on the terrace, you're in nature, and you can start to have an outdoor experience. So you can go outside from the sitting room, you can go outside from your bedroom. And the outside is just there, and it's beckoning, and it's saying, come and join me.
Mm-hmm. So what is the effect of that then? How does it manifest itself?
Well, one of the things with dementia is that a person may often feel agitated, and they don't know why. So they're feeling restless. There's feelings that are rising up, and they don't know where those feelings come from or what they're doing. So being able to open a door and go outside and, if you like, look for relief without somebody stopping you or saying you can't do that, is just a huge gift. So in a way, you can walk off your anxiety, you can walk off your restlessness, you can go outside and look at colours, listen to birds, feel the wind on your face, move about freely, and before you know it, you feel less agitated. I mean, you'll know that yourself when you're yes. when you're feeling uneasy. Yeah. What do you do? Oh, I think I'll go for a walk. Mm. So it's really as simple as that.
Can you see it now, Jennifer?
What
we're going to do now? What are we doing? What's the task today?
I can't remember what he told me.
Feed the birds.
What? Feed the birds?
Yes. So here's the last one. Look. Oh, yes.
Lots of us have got bird tables and we enjoy watching birds, but the positive effects of interacting with birds for people living with dementia is something that Ken Elkins has developed into a nationwide program in the United States of America. He works with the National Audubon Society in Connecticut, the US equivalent of the RSPB here. It was his own experience and love of birds which inspired him to set up the Bird Tales program, which now exists in care homes right across the country.
My love of birds started when I was about 10 years old at my grandmother's house. That we always enjoyed watching the birds at her bird feeder, but one morning in particular we woke up and there was this little black-capped chickadee that had hit its head on the patio door. And my grandmother taught me how to hold this bird. And for this short while, maybe 10 minutes or so, I got this opportunity to hold on to this bird and help it back to health. And I watched it kind of wake up. And during my programs with people with dementia, we kind of use that experience as the opening moments of the program, that I have everyone hold on to a model of a bird. It might not be a black-capped chickadee, but everyone gets that same sort of experience of holding on to a bird. I was able to remember the senses of that moment and how I felt, how the opportunity to feel how soft its feathers on its chest were. And that opportunity to get to see its eyes open up. And you don't normally get to see a bird's eyes when they're out there in the trees and the bushes at a distance. But this bird was right there in my hand. So I could see those things and notice the exact shapes of its beak as it opened up and yawned for the first time while it was groggy. So I use those moments to kind of help everyone else get that feeling, that emotion. And being able to connect with nature, it might not have been an experience like that they had before, but it makes them start to think again about a time they might have been outdoors and seen a bird that surprised them, and the sense of awe that you have when you watch these creatures outdoors.
And what impact do you see this having, this interaction with birds in particular, with people who are living with dementia?
Most of the people I've been able to interact with who are living with dementia, they are living in long-term care facilities or dementia care facilities. And the number one focus of the staff there is their health of these residents. So they don't get outdoors as often. And whenever I can bring in any sounds of nature and even the hint of nature, it wakes them up. And once we start to get to know them a little bit, if I can hear some life stories of where they've been, I can hopefully think of a bird or two that they probably interacted with. So, for example, there was this one woman, Emmeline, who seemed like she was asleep most of the time. She really wasn't very talkative at all. But once they introduced her to me as a woman who had been an equestrian her entire life, I put down the bright red cardinal and the blue jay and the yellow goldfinch and instead went to the bottom of my collection of birds and brought out a barn swallow. The swallow is a bird that lives on every continent, and I'd like to know of a horse barn that doesn't have one nesting in it. So I put this bird in her hands. Her eyes were still closed. So I was able to help her imagine the bird by feeling it. We took her fingers and let her feel the long pointy wings and the long pointy tail that has a fork in it. And I started playing the sound of the bird over and over again to her as I was squeezing the bird model. And her eyes just absolutely snapped open after a moment. And she looked up at me and she just smiled like she recognized that sound. I heard from the staff that entire afternoon she was chatting away about horses the rest of the day.
Wow, so you'd really provoked something within her, deep within her. You'd kind of sparked her up again.
Yes. People living with dementia, we might not always know what's going on. So our only information we can gather is their outward reactions. So whenever we can evoke a smile or just even this light in their eyes, then we know that we've done our job at that moment of brightening up their day.
And why do you think it's birds in particular that seems to be so effective and bird song?
Well, birds are always around us. Even in urban environments, you can find birds. And people with dementia are living somewhere in the past. We're not exactly always sure where they are in their lives. But the memories that they have around them that they're able to access, because their short-term memory is faded away, we might not know where that is, but we try the best we can to be able to help them with that. And also the other technique is that all the sensory activities and the sounds of the birds in particular are calming, is that if we can help improve their mood at that moment, we know that they're, through research, that their change in their mood will stick with them for hours throughout the day. They won't remember what helped them get into a good mood, but they will be much happier throughout the day. You can ask them and they'll say, I'm in such a great mood today. I don't know why, but hopefully we can track it back and it was the bird sounds.
How are you, Rob?
Okay.
You're doing a grand job.
Well, yes.
So whoever cut the grass managed to put it all over the paving stones.
Really?
Well, you've just been sweeping up.
Oh.
Well, Patricia's still sweeping it up.
We'll have to teach that man not to do that again, won't we? All right.
By going outside, what benefits do you see in Rob?
But he likes to be occupied. I mean, when he doesn't always sleep very well, so he may be very sleepy and not wanting to do much. But he does like to be occupied and to be useful. And so that's one thing that he can do if he's working in the garden. He feels he's making a contribution. But I think air and exercise, if anything's going to help his sleep, air and exercise is probably what's beneficial. And on a good day, he really does enjoy a walk. Mm-hmm. If he's very sleepy, you point things out to him and it's not clear whether he really notices. But on a good day, yes, he really does. And there's some lovely, colourful plants in the garden here.
How much did you used to get out and about before you came to Simeon?
It's difficult. I really don't know. If you were walking about and walking, I suppose you could say.
Mm-hmm. Were you much of a gardener?
Well, moderately.
Because after he retired, he did more gardening. When he was still working, obviously he was confined in how much time he had for outdoors. But after he retired, and when he was free of other commitments, walking was one of the last things he could do on his own. And then he had always to be out with somebody, except in a safe place like this. But I think you took to... I remember you gardening even when you were still working, but particularly after he retired. He turned his back garden into an allotment pretty well. Vegetables were the thing.
What was your job, Rob?
Well, gardening, that's what it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a law lecturer.
A law lecturer.
And he's a solicitor by profession.
If you live in a communal setting, which a care home is, you're with people all the time, which can be a source of security and reassurance, but it can also be a trial. Mm-hmm. If you've got communal spaces, but quiet private spaces and things in between, then it offers opportunities for how you're feeling to be in a space where you'll feel best. If that's alone on a bench in a quiet corner of the garden or on the terrace where other people are sitting around chatting. So you can move and find where you feel best.
To a certain extent, we've been talking about the psychological benefits and even the physical benefits in terms of, you know, very moderate exercise, sweeping up, weeding, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if there's chemical benefits of actually being out. You know, well, I know I feel a lot better if I can manage to get out in the sunshine come springtime. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure there's plenty of scientific evidence now. I mean, with the advancements of neuroscience, the relationship between the mind, the brain, relationships, and how you are is there's a huge amount of evidence growing to show that the one influences the other. So even in a person, maybe especially in a person with dementia, where the actual brain is dying, is diminishing, you've got to keep stimulating, you know, what neurons there are still active. If you can keep those, as they say, use it or lose it. And even with the dementia, you've got to keep offering something, keep those neurons, transmitters pinging away. So changing environments, fresh air, sunshine, I'm sure it has some effect on the actual brain, which is dying.
He just loves being out, doesn't he, Patricia?
Yes, he does.
He doesn't. Like, I don't think he minds where it is, really, as long as he's out. But you can see that he appreciates. Like, I could tell he really was happy to be in that forest.
Yes.
You know, with the trees overhanging and the smell, and it's just lovely.
I think he does enjoy that, but I think he also enjoys, say, being taken for a spin in the car. It's this sense of going somewhere and going somewhere out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rob's very particular about his paths.
Oh, am I a car, Bob? That's that Bob.
Rob.
Is it Rob?
Rob, that's Rob. You all right there, Rob?
Yeah. That's like a dog, Bob.
But it must be very difficult for you.
It is, especially when I remember what Rob was like before. But, of course, I've seen him regularly as it's developed, so I don't get a
not
shock.
The shock, yeah.
Yes. Days vary. I think the last really good day was about a fortnight ago, and that really cheered me, knowing that he could still be like that. I mean, he's more confused now. He was sweeping very... Well, he was going at it in a regular way before coffee, and he seemed more confused now, wondering what he should do with a brush. Which brush he would use. Whether he would put his gloves on or not. But I think Michelle has a very good way with him. She's used to him in the garden.
I've got very little personal experience of dementia, but I was just watching... One of the folk out there was sweeping up and was doing an absolutely great job of it, got distracted, took a glove off, picked the brush back up again, and was obviously looking at it thinking, what is this thing? What do you do with it? And Michelle went across and, you know, said, oh, put the glove back on, and it came back again, and that must be... I mean, never mind frustrating for them. It must be quite difficult for you lot, too. Mm. You know, it sort of drifts in and out all the time.
Yeah, it does drift out, in and out. And nothing is a given for very long. Mm-hmm. You can't count on that today I'm going to know how to use my fork in this moment. The next moment, I maybe don't know. For those of us who work in these environments with people, I guess we just take it as it comes. There's a famous saying here is, well, you just go with the flow. And I don't want to compare people with dementia to children at all. But if you think about how it is when you're with a very young child or a baby, you have huge patience, don't you, when they're learning to walk or they're gaining all of these skills. I guess you have to say the same thing for a person with dementia. It's just going in reverse, sadly, that, you know, the downward decline is not as steady. It bumps along. You just take each day as it comes.
Well, Michelle's gotten back in the groove again.
Yes.
It's not easy getting that wet grass off. It sticks to the stones. You know.
Okay. You can do it.
I'm not criticising.
I spend my life sweeping stuff up.
Oh, that's a shame.
We have a spare brush, don't we, Ingrid?
Jeannie, who manages the Simeon Care Home, mentioned the fact that one of the main reasons they extended and developed their garden was to try and create a safe space for their residents in the outdoors. Now, this idea of being safe but still allowing a modicum of risk, of managing risk with dementia, is something that also came up with Professor June Andrews, who talked through some of the assistive technology out there which could help keep tabs on your loved one.
There was a tragic story a few years ago about a man in Stirlingshire who loved to walk, and he went out in the hills and got lost and was never found alive. And so it's really important for people who have got a hint that maybe they're going to start to have this kind of problem should use all the assistive technology that's available.
Such as?
Well, we know how people use and misuse their mobile phones when they go up in the mountains to, you know, summon people when they've sprained their ankle, and you know, people get a bit annoyed about that. But there are GPS locator devices that you can wear that are about the size of a wristwatch, and they're sophisticated enough that if you were to fall over and not move, then they would send out an alert. So it wouldn't just be that we would know where you were, but we would know that you fell over and you haven't moved. Mm-hmm. And so the great thing about somebody having one of those is you can let them go out in the mountains and hills as much as they like, because, you know, if something happened, you'd be able to find them. The biggest tragedy is people not being allowed to do things in case something happens. So you start taking precautions long before they're needed. So locator devices are available. They're getting less expensive all the time. They're quite discreet to be worn. And I mean, I imagine by the time I am old enough to have dementia, then I'll probably get chipped like a dog. It'll be, you know, like your pet dog.
They could probably do that now, June, to be honest.
We already have subcutaneous devices that can be used for this kind of purpose. And another thing that we know of is you'd be familiar with those sticky patches that people mm-hmm. put on your chest when they're taking a measure of your heart rate. Mm-hmm. Well, we now have digital versions of that, so we could stick the patches on you and send you up the mountain. We don't have to have 20 miles of wire to check that you're not overdoing it in your in the cardiac department. So we would be able to monitor from the bottom of the hill whether or not you were overdoing it on the hill, and we could ring you up and say slow down for a bit and take a rest if you've not already decided to do so because we think your heart's going a bit fast. So digital monitoring of people's physical condition at a distance is something that's available to us now. As the price of these things go down, it's the sort of thing you could slap on your dad before you send them up Booklet of Moor on a weekend.
What are the ethics of actually putting a locator device or a tracking device on somebody who doesn't know what it is? Does that matter?
Well, it matters hugely if you do things to people who don't know what it is. And that's why all of us now who don't have dementia, and even some of us who do, who are listening, should go as soon as they possibly can and get a power of attorney made. Mm. And that's somebody who you trust who can agree or disagree to these things for you if you've reached the stage where it's a bit hard for you to understand and to agree to it. Because it's great if there's someone else who will make this decision in your own interest. And if you feel just now, I would never want that, then all you have to do is make sure they know that, and they'll make sure it never happens if you lose the capacity to say it. But it is the case that we do masses of things to people with dementia without their permission. Who gave us permission to make them stay in the chair? Who gave us permission to lock them up in a stuffy atmosphere and not allow them to go out on the mountain in case they fell over? You know, we do so many negative things to people without their permission. The idea of doing something positive without their permission to me seems quite benign. And also it's the lesser of two evils, because what you may say, you know, I know with families who use locator devices, they say to their mum, you know what, I'm quite happy for you to be completely free range as long as you promise to wear your locator bracelet. But if you won't wear it, then we'd start wanting to come with you. And I think all of us, most of us, would like to be a bit free range if we were ever unfortunate enough to be afflicted by something like dementia.
June Andrews, Professor Emeritus of the Public Understanding of Dementia at Stirling University. Suzanne Powell contacted us to tell us about her dad and his particular form of dementia, which is called Lewy body. Now, it's not his mind but his body, which is most seriously affected. So a once very active man is now virtually housebound and unable to move easily. I went for a walk with Suzanne close to her home, where she cares for her dad. She told me about how spending time outside helps her to cope with it all.
Oscar, come on, you big hero. I don't know anyone that doesn't have some problem in their life, you know. Mine just happens to be my dad's not the man he used to be. But when you get outdoors, nobody knows you, you know, and I think I said in the email to the programme that I've walked this path with tears streaming my face before, mm-hmm. you know. Just got it all out the system, and other times I've been in a forest where my son's been mountain biking and I've just sat on a wee tree and had a moment to myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just helps me realise that this will still be here, this is still here, and this is my space. And everything seems better when you're outdoors, getting the fresh air, getting your heart pumping and getting your brain reset, I think.
Tell me about your dad.
Oh, my dad. He's lovely and kind. He was my hero when I grew up, and he's a really funny sense of humour. He was always there for me, always sorted out my problems. He was just my dad. Mm-hmm. Big old cuddly dad. Very gradually, Mum and I noticed that Dad would forget things. You'd talk to him about something and he'd either only pick up half of what you'd said or would forget completely. He then began to get slower, physically slower, would have problems with, you know, everyday little things. Dad's physical mobility deteriorated further, and I went and sought help from a carer's charity in the nearby town and became Dad's official carer to help with that. And on the back of that, they suggested I went on a dementia awareness course for 2 hours. And all I remember is sitting down and, she put up this PowerPoint showing the sort of top 12 classic symptoms, and my father had every single one.
Just going bing, 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 all the way down the list.
And what it was is the myriad of medical problems I mentioned. Mm-hmm. You join the dots and together they point towards dementia. Mm-hmm. But because we were seeing them all as individual problems, they were being treated as individual problems by all these various specialists, the diagnosis was then revised to be vascular dementia with Lewy body and or Parkinson's, which is also a form of dementia. Now, as a layperson, I thought Parkinson's and dementia were two different things. I thought Alzheimer's was a different thing.
I think a lot of people do.
Yes, yes. And I'd never heard of Lewy body dementia. Never heard of it.
What are Lewy bodies?
Well, Lewy body is, I think it's named after Dr. Lewy, who, from what I've read, my very skimpy knowledge, assessed that this form of dementia, it is a form of dementia, but it affects the physical side of your body. The brain isn't able to get the messages to the limbs, and the limbs aren't able to respond. And a characteristic of both Parkinson's and Lewy body is when they're walking, this is high.
Mm-hmm. There's a kind of shuffling
action. It's a shuffle, just to get the motion forward.
Yeah. Propulsion.
Yeah, and the balance goes as well. But because his memory is still okay, he knows what's going on.
Yes.
And he's very aware.
Which is really difficult for him.
It is. And, you know, toileting's an issue for him. Feeding himself's becoming an issue. Having to be dependent. We're having to bring his bed downstairs. He's so aware of all these things. And the lack of dignity, the lack of, you know, respect for himself. He used to do our garden. He's done all his life. He's been a gardener.
Very outdoor guy, by the way.
Very outdoor guy. My dad, in Northern Ireland, was in charge of 3 different sports grounds. Mm-hmm. We moved to Scotland, and again, he was in charge of sports grounds. At the end of his career, he was in charge of one of the major sporting stadiums in Britain. As a hobby, he would go out and potter and grow vegetables, grow plants and all the rest of it. And this is the first year we've not had any produce getting planted. But he looks out the window now and all he sees is his beautiful garden. I'm not a gardener. He sees it going in his eyes to rack and ruin. He feels he's useless and he can no longer contribute to the family. And this to me is the worst aspect of Louis Body for my dad. He is mentally still able to appreciate what he cannot do. It's horrible to see my dad, this big bear of a man, you know, weeping at times because the joy of his life is gone. He can no longer go out and putter in the garden. He can't even walk around our garden anymore without somebody being with him.
Yeah, I was about to say, you must still take him out occasionally.
Oh, I do. You know, it's one of these things, you know, you and I are walking along at a nice, gentle, conversational pace. This would be really fast for my dad.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to just go with it. Mum and I are adamant we're keeping him at home for as long as we're both able to do it.
Even if you're walking along, as you say, it's almost geological speed.
Uh-huh.
What effect does having, you know, being outdoors have on him?
Well, his balance is very badly affected. Mm-hmm. I can watch my dad and I can see him willing his leg to move and the message is not getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't have something to hold on to, he just falls. He just tips right over. And there's been quite a few occasions when I've had to pick him up off the floor.
I was talking to somebody about this just the other day. That, you know, when people do go into care, there is a quite understandable desire, and sometimes earlier than that with families, to wrap them up in cotton wool to make them safe, to say, oh, but they might fall. Well, yep, we mm-hmm. all might fall.
Yep.
What's your position on that?
My position on that is I don't want my dad falling over, so I do as much as I can to stop him. We privately got him special frames that help him when he's at his worst and help us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got to think of my mum. They're both in their 70s. I'm in my late 40s. You know, nobody can afford to be doing their back up, lifting my dad up. So we try and encourage him to be as mobile as we can, but it's a calculated risk. Is that the expression I'm looking for?
Yeah.
So things like he shouldn't be on stairs, right? The bed's coming downstairs. But that doesn't mean you need a wheelchair to go from the bedroom to the kitchen to get your tea. You can still walk. If it takes you 10 minutes, it takes you 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you need help with a shower, well, fine. We've got carers coming in to help him shower. If he wants to go out for a walk, fine. But tell somebody, and one of us will go with you.
Mm-hmm.
I have the blue badge through my dad. So when we go anywhere, like the hospital visit, the doctor visit, we park the car where we can, and if there's a coffee shop nearby, well, we go in and we have a cup of coffee together, and you know, we just get on with it. You know, as I said to my dad, you can either let this dictate your life, which it's doing, or you can make the best of it and try to live as normally as possible, and that's what we are trying to do with my dad.
Something that I'm becoming aware of just through doing this program, that it's a sentence in a way, but it doesn't have to be just a sentence. You can live with this condition. You can manage it to a certain extent as best as you can.
Yes, I think, I don't know, I'm not an expert on it. I can just speak for my dad. But I think when you've got the physical form of dementia like my dad has, I think it's a lot harder. There are some days I wish my dad was as mentally incapacitated as his body is, because it'd be so much easier for him. The one that I've noticed that I have started doing almost subconsciously is touching my dad a lot more. You know, if I'm having to help him up from a chair or down from a chair, I'll stroke the back of the hand as I'm doing it. And, you know, sometimes he'll hold my fingers while we're doing it. You know, little things like that. When he's had a little accident or whatever because he's not aware of what's happening, I joke about it. You know, well, Dad, you know, I was in the forest last week and I got caught short. You know, all happens to us, all happens to the best of us.
And it does.
It does, you know. Much to the dog's amusement. Yeah, I didn't know humans did that too.
Oh, yeah. Your dad's obviously very lucky to, you know, what you just described to me is it's a loving family, a caring family. You, mm-hmm. You're obviously trying to do your very, very best for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sad that he can't get the full advantage of the outdoors as once he did.
Mm-hmm.
How much is the outdoors, I mean, you're out here with your dog today, how much is the outdoors a refuge for you sometimes? Because you need time to yourself too.
If we didn't live here, I don't know how I'd cope. We got the dog 5 years ago and I've gone from being someone who didn't do much exercise to I'm attempting my first half marathon this weekend. our local half marathon. And when I'm having a bad day, this is one of my favourite walks because it's just 5 minutes from the house. I come down here and I always say I leave the house with a problem and come back with a solution, or at least a better perspective on that.
Mm-hmm.
And my thanks to Suzanne there for being so open with us about the reality of caring for her father. Being active, getting out there, is clearly therapeutic for Suzanne and helps her to deal with the demands of caring for her dad. But there's more to it, as Professor June Andrews explains.
The research says it's never too soon to take exercise and it's never too late to take exercise if you're trying to improve your cognitive function. And there's some really simple science around that, which is around vascular health, because as soon as you start taking exercise, your vascular health improves. That's more oxygen to the brain, and that's the fuel that the brain uses. So exercise, even starting in your 50s or your 60s, that can be really good for delaying the symptoms. Now, some people sadly are going to get dementia no matter what happens, because there are some underlying conditions. It's very unusual for people to have a genetic form of dementia. But for those people, even if it's inevitable that they're going to get the dementia, the exercise and some other lifestyle things that you can do can actually delay the time when the symptoms are so bad that you need a lot of help from other people. So exercise, absolutely, it's the new wonder treatment for everything, because it's what we were evolved to do. And if we're not doing enough of it, then we're going to be in trouble.
Well, we had a lady living with us who loved gardening. And when she first came to live in the care home, she didn't have dementia. And she would go out into the garden. She had her own secateurs, Risk. And she would cut flowers. She pruned shrubs and things that were high level. And then as the dementia set in, she began to lose the plot. And one day I was outside and she, with her secateurs, had just pruned a bush very badly. And she was looking at it and she knew it wasn't right.
And when you say very badly, how very badly?
It was pretty misshapen. There was pretty much nothing left to it. And she was troubled and she looked at me. She said, that's not right, is it? And I said, nah, not really. And after that, she put the secateurs away herself because she knew she couldn't manage it anymore. So that's when we started to have to get involved with her and the garden, because before that she was largely self-directed. So we had to start looking, well, what could we do to keep her going out into the garden? So we got things like a little walker with a basket in it and then one of those grab sticks, because she didn't stray away from the home, interestingly. She stayed around the house. So she would pick up pine cones that had fallen from the pine trees and put them in the basket. So she was tidying. We had an apple tree, and she would go out with her little trolley and her grab stick and pick up apples. So she did things like that that she knew she could manage and was safe. And, you know, so then rotten apples started to appear with good apples. But it didn't matter. It was the activity that mattered. Then she decided she liked to cut wood. So we got her a sawhorse, mm-hmm. and a saw. And she would go out of her patio with her Zimmer frame and walk up to the sawhorse. And we would have to keep a little stack of wood there, not too heavy, of branches, and she could still pick them up, put them on her sawhorse, and saw up small pieces of wood for the fireplace. And one day I looked at, and this was done just outside the with the window, so staff could keep an eye on her. And of course, the family knew about it; it was all risk assessed. But one day, she took the pieces of wood that she had cut to a perfect length, and she stacked them in the Zimmer frame using the Zimmer frame as a frame for holding the sticks. Of course, she couldn't walk back into the house with it, but it was very ingenious. I have a photograph of it. It's just classic. So as the disease progressed, you know, I mean, all that finished. And, you know, in the end, she was just happy to sit by the window and look out into the garden. She was one of the most dignified and peaceful people I've ever met. She did occasionally become agitated, but very, very rarely. And a short spell in nature, or, you know, being by the window and being able to look out, that just did it for her. It was a really strong connection.
Jeannie Carlson, who manages Simeon Care for the Elderly near Aberdeen, introducing an element of humour to proceedings, which, if you speak to anyone involved in caring for people living with dementia, is pretty key to getting through what become very unpredictable days. Confession time now. When we started doing the interviews for this programme, neither Helen nor myself realised how difficult it is to interview people with dementia. I mean, we don't realise on a day-to-day basis how many times we employ time references, and that's very, very difficult for them. We learned by trial and error that sometimes you have to sit there, just follow where they want to go in terms of the conversation, and sometimes just by doing that, and very often by being outdoors, it's enough. You are communicating. Here's Alistair again, talking about his experiences of working overseas.
At one stage, I'd wanted to go to India, to work there. Once I got out of all the schooling and what have you, it was a great place. The Indians, the Arabs, etc. If you were decent and saying the right things to them, they couldn't do better. Shake your hands and do anything they could to help you. It was great. A lot of people didn't like it, but I thought it was a great place to be.
Why didn't people like it?
Oh, I think just because they couldn't understand the language, you see. If you try it, then they helped you. But as I said, I was wanting to go to India initially. I had an uncle who'd been in India, and he said, don't do it, it's finished. And it was he who pointed me to the Gulf, the Arabian Gulf, and that was great. And that was my lead, and my language and all the rest of it there. You didn't learn any languages, did you, there?
No, just a bit of German that I know, but I didn't learn any Arabic.
No.
Well, you're very lucky to have had these experiences.
Oh, it couldn't have been better. As I said, I wanted to go to India. It was an uncle of mine who said, don't do it, that's finished now.
I was talking to a couple of people with dementia this morning, and I kind of schooled myself before I went to talk to them not to say things like, now do you remember, or can you tell me when? I thought, right, you know, let's just parse out all references to time. It's damn near impossible. It's really difficult to try and hold a conversation without time references in it somewhere.
Yes, it's really hard. And of course, as with anything that you're trying to avoid talking about, the more you think about it, the harder it is. But people with dementia are very forgiving. Sometimes it's just nice to say to them, tell me about something. You know, tell me about what you like to do, or tell me about places you like to go. And so people will tell you about the ones that they remember. You don't have to say, what places do you remember? Just say, tell me about places you like to go. Tell me about places that matter to you. Because people with dementia will have places that matter to them, places where they like to be, long after they can answer rapid-fire questions from you about what their top three locations are.
Thank you.
Dad, what was that story you used to tell me about Joe Bloggs?
Yeah.
You know, and either you'll hit it or you'll miss it, you know, or you'll start off telling you one story and it will go off into something else. And, you know, one thing I have learnt is you seize the moment when it happens. You know, my dad, as was, is no longer there, you know, but I get glimpses of him, and that's what I cherish. And part of my way of dealing with this is, this sounds so twee, I have a little happiness book, and every night before I go to bed, I write down something good that's happened today, and especially if it's been a moment with my dad, no matter what it is, you know, whether he's had a period of extreme lucidity. My mum is quite active in various things, and dad seems to have his most lucid moments when it's just him and I sitting over the kitchen table having a cup of coffee together, and he'll ask me a question, or he'll tell me a story, or we'll just chat the way we used to do. And they're precious memories, which, you know, my dad is gone, but this person that I'm looking after now still shows flashes of that.